Voters are about to ask, who is the real Toby Doden? And are his plans for governing South Dakota, in a word, workable? You're listening to STPB's Dakota Political Junkies, where we talk with political scientists, journalists, and lawmakers about how politics works and doesn't work in South Dakota. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. Well, South Dakota Republicans have chosen two very different candidates to face each other in a runoff election for governor. Businessman Toby Doden came out on top of this week's primary contest at 31%. Incumbent Governor Larry Roden garnered 25% of the vote. And Dusty Johnson, once an incredibly popular figure in state politics, came in third. Now, the next 8 weeks as we get ready for a runoff election are going to be really interesting as voters seek to learn more about what kind of governor Roden has been and what kind of leader Doden might be. So let's get to it. John Hunter is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader. He's a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Michael Card is professor emeritus of political science at the University of South Dakota. They joined me around the microphones in SDPB's Kirby Family Studios in Sioux Falls. We'll start here with John Hunter.
Well, think in a four-person race, which again needed 35% to avoid a runoff, all four candidates were within a fairly small range. I mean, they all were, let's say, between 20 and 30. So it was a very even race. It didn't feel even. It felt like it was controversial at times. It went negative at times. You know, I'm not sure we can conclude a lot when you have a four-person race that was split fairly evenly, and now we'll have a two-person race in 8 weeks that we don't know how that one's going to go either.
First time we've had this.
Ever.
In the governor's race, yeah.
And if anything, it's sort of a reminder back to when we didn't do this and it went to the convention and Gladys Pyle was the leader out of the 1930 or 32 race and ended up being excluded completely from even real much consideration at the Republican Party convention.
Say more about Gladys Pyle.
Well, she was the first woman really elected to office. She was the first senator elected, although she was finishing out the Peter Norbeck term after he died in office. And she was elected to the office but never got to serve because in the last 2 months in 1936, there wasn't any Congress going on at that time, so she was never sworn in. But she was the leading vote getter in a five-way race, and the fifth person, Green, ended up being elected governor, and that was not a good time to be elected as a Republican.
It's fair to say there was gender bias in that, Mike?
I'm just assuming that. I think it would be difficult to come up with any other explanation.
All right. So we do not have ranked choice voting. And probably most South Dakotans don't even understand how that would work. But I was hearing the term bullet voting yesterday. I don't even know if that's a real thing. Mike, have you ever heard of that before? Were people basically saying, like, I'm only going to vote for one person on this ballot in the House, some of these House races, legislative races, where they had four or five candidates?
Well, when I was a teenager, I was worked for campaigns of the Republican Party. And when we were in a relatively Democratic district where I grew up and we were urged to remind people that they did not need to vote for two representatives, they could cast one vote for the Republican. Mm-hmm. And we know that the Democratic Party has been doing that lately. So it's not unique to one party. It's actually one of the most effective strategies if you're in a three-person race and two people get to move on or two people are elected. So It's the effective strategy. It's very hard to win when you're the one candidate going against two people from the other party, and especially now when the parties are so distinctly divided and when 50% of the electorate is a registered Republican, 26% are registered no party affiliation, and 24%. So if you're a Democrat, that's a great thing to do. But we also saw that. I don't know if it was factional-based, and that may be a transition to move to, is what are the factions in the Republican Party? We know they're there, but it's hard to put a label on which factions and what organizes the factions, what ideologies.
Before we get to that, what happened to Dusty Johnson? He was, in the beginning, it's his race to lose, and he did not win. He lost. He did lose it. Why? What happened, John?
We'll be speculating this for a little while, and I think there are several different possibilities. One is that the campaign turned negative, which many times they do, and incumbents with – he wasn't incumbent, but he's a 8-year House member. That's the intent, is to find something in where you voted against something that appeals to people, and then you splash that hard. So I do think some of the negative campaigning hurt him. I do think he was a little bit caught between different factions, as Mike would call them, in the Republican Party. Is he a far right? Is he a moderate? Is he and people vote on very minor differences. We saw that at the conventions in recent years, where you have a very popular politician like John Thune, and someone will find one vote at some obscure issue and get mad at them for that and not vote for them. So one thing I think, Lori, that needs to be emphasized with the Dusty situation is that there are so many distinct voters in South Dakota, each with their own ideas about how this is. There is not the same kind of groupthink as there is in many situations. I see people voting, or I hear about people voting for so many different types of issues. It's not like one issue or five issues or whatever, but they'll say if they're tall or short or old or young or whatever, and they'll good looking or not good looking, whatever those things are, and people vote on all sorts of characteristics. So I'm not sure we'll know very soon what happened to Dusty.
Hmm. Mike, do you have a thought on what happened to Dusty Johnson in this gubernatorial primary?
In this primary, one thing that stuck out at me from the mailers that I got were the negative ads about Hansen and Roden were paid for by the Dusty campaign. What some of the positive notes and some of the what I considered to be sort of passive-aggressive negatives came from the Political Action Committee that was created or at least started by Doden. And whether he has any affiliation, we know legally they can't coordinate activities. But if you have similar ideologies, that's going to be easy to coordinate.
So that negativity didn't stick to Doden, as it were. People didn't associate negativity with him, and therefore it didn't hurt him? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm thinking, although he let some out last night that he got into the race so that he could defeat Dusty.
Right. Yeah. I noticed that, too, that there was that more negativity in an instead of a gracious kind of acceptance speech.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that has to be in the minds of voters is who is the real Toby Doden? Mm. We saw his in the commercials, we saw his wife give a very positive notion of who he is and what he's all about, and yet we see glimpses of a completely other side of Toby Doden.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the challenges is, you know, when the soundbite is, I'm really glad that I defeated Dusty Johnson, you're not running against Dusty Johnson anymore. You're running against Larry Roden. And Larry Roden really came out at the end with, here is my positivity, civility. It seemed like he was already pivoting to where, well, not pivoting. He was already pointing out that this is the candidate I've always been. Does that help him, John?
Yes. Oh. I think it does. I think there will, this will be an interesting 8 weeks. That's for sure. And the messages, you know, Larry Roden's message early on has said, you know, if people are criticizing me, let me tell you instead who I really am. And it was very, very positive. It may very well appeal to a lot of South Dakotans. It's going to be an interesting 8 weeks. I hope we're on sometime in the next 8 weeks that we can talk about how that campaign is going, because it could be a real interesting one.
And we should say, what did Larry Roden get right in his campaign? Because there was a lot of speculation that he just wasn't going to be a factor, and he was all night long, and he still continues to be a factor. And then let's talk about what Toby Doden did right, because that's a rise that a lot of people did not expect.
interesting that it's someone with a lot of legislative and gubernatorial experience.
Roden.
Yep. Roden in the legislature, I believe, 16 years. 6 years as lieutenant governor, 2 years as governor. A lot of experience. Be running off against someone with, as far as I know, no government experience, not in the legislature, not in the, in any of the elected office and so forth. So Republicans have chosen two quite different people here. It's not like we're splitting hairs on two people who are really close. How are we going to differentiate them? These are very different candidates. And so the question, of course, that comes to my mind right away is, for the 46 or so percent of people who voted for John Hanson or Dusty Johnson, who are they going to vote for in late July?
Yeah.
There's a lot of votes up for grabs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a one-off. Is how will those voters, will they vote for either one of these two candidates? And if so, whom? I would see, you know, Mike's predictions aren't particularly good in anything, but I would say that the Hanson people would be more likely to vote for Doden, and the Dusty people, some of them will go for Roden, but what about the rest? You know, so even if I'm thinking half of them will go for Roden, do the other half sit the election out? Do they sit this particular race out? What will they do?
Yeah.
And again, you don't have any Democrats who get to vote in this thing. This is not like you're going to a general election where you open it up to all South Dakotans. Right. This is still going to be a Republican race.
And it's very interesting that that tends to be one of the non-democratic features of our governmental system.
Yeah. Which I want to talk a little bit about the state. Well, we didn't finish about what.
Yeah, we should go back to what did Toby Doden do right.
What did Toby Doden do right?
I think the number one thing that he did right in order to get elected was to say, I'm going to eliminate the property tax. Mm. And so, I mean, I have enough schooling to know that that simply isn't going to work. I get support from that, from the very conservative tax foundation that says there's just no way to replace the property tax as part of our taxation system. But if
he wants to tax the trust industry, can he do that?
Absolutely.
Can the governor come in and say, and then watch him leave? Yeah.
Right. No, I would say no. There's five different steps that have to happen for these things.
Yeah. By the way, that's nuanced. You know,
right.
That right.
Really,
right.
I really reduced that to.
Right. So just because someone says it somewhere, it does. That is not to say he can do that.
No.
Can't do it by executive order.
No, you cannot. And I guess where I'm coming off on this is to say most people aren't political junkies like we are.
Right.
And paying attention to things. And we're getting snippets of information. We, you know, our best source of information is trusted friends. Yeah. And if we have a group that says, you're right, we need to get rid of the property tax, or our property taxes are too high for at least a third of the population in the state, they've risen quite dramatically. So I'm all for somebody who would say that we're going to eliminate the property tax, because they haven't been informed of what the negative consequences of doing that are.
Like closing schools or whatever the property tax goes to fund.
Roads. I mean, everything local government does.
He's going to doge state government. He's going to come in. It's inefficient. In fact, he was even saying in the election last night, it's going to go faster. When I'm governor, I'm going to make these auditors go faster. This is an example of inefficient government. Does he understand how it works?
Well, he implied other states are reporting before the polls close, which is not true. You know, he was saying a third of the precincts are already reporting by the time the polls closed.
He said the week before the election there wouldn't be a runoff because he was going to walk away with it. And when we talk about what Doden did right, that has to be one. I mean, that was a great way to get free press the week beforehand, was to call your shot and say, I know I'm going to win. Now, he was wrong, but he's the leader. So nobody's going to remember that he said there wasn't going to be a runoff. They're only going to remember that he said, I'm the guy to watch, and everybody watched him. He gave his voters the confidence to come in that day and think they weren't throwing their vote away because they had four choices.
But those four were all fairly close. I mean, if you think between 20 and 30, that's almost split. So I would argue that this is still a toss-up. I mean, they could have gone several different ways in this scenario. And I think the two-person election is a toss-up also.
Any predictions for the next 8 weeks, what we'll see?
I hope to avoid mailings.
There was so much money spent in this campaign.
Right.
I don't know if it's more than ever, but it has to be very high that people in South Dakota are exhausted by that. They don't like negativity as a general rule. And we're inundated with mailers and flyers. You got to get your message out. You got to get people to the polls, but you got to be careful. Because I would also argue that, Dusty, I mean, you could not sit, if you were sitting at a bar having lunch, the TV in the background was just constant Dusty ads. Mm. To at some point, I wonder if people were just exhausted from seeing his face.
And you wonder, too, if people are buying advertising time. I mean, you wouldn't naturally buy the Kello 10 o'clock news in July for a political race, but now it'll be necessary. So I wonder if they all made the calls to Kello or to last night or whatever.
These were spending money this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Doden loaned himself $4 million. Dusty came in with a $6 million war chest. I think the total, I can't remember which newspaper article I read this morning saying it was the most expensive campaign.
Yeah.
And, that's in nominal dollars, today's dollars. So we may have had other more expensive, especially when we consider that we've had 20% inflation since 2020. You're spending a lot of money for this. And, you know, can you buy an election?
But Governor Roden did not spend as much on this, and he finished, he's in the runoff.
Strong,
He could very well be be the candidate.
And, I guess if I were to try to simplify this particular race, it would be, I'm going to fix the problems that you have and named a couple of the problems that resonated with people. Versus, I'm a person of character, and I will fix the problems that that we see, and it may take us a while to do it, but we'll all come to agreement on what the problems are and the way that we fixed them. You know, it's sort of like there are very few people that are complaining about the prison. There are still some who do, and how we reach that decision, but they voted for it, and there isn't much you can do, really, in terms of good management capabilities. That's what you want out of consensus. Yeah. We can at least live with the solution, and we're not going to walk away and backbite it and say, well, I really didn't want to do that, but I had my arm twisted. I haven't heard anybody say their arm was twisted to do this.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the state legislature now. You know, John, you said something earlier just about the issues that people are voting on, and it makes me think of, ticket splitting. When people will, maybe they'll vote for a Democrat, but then they'll vote for a Republican. In this case, we don't have like one, Republicans all vote this way in mass. Republicans are ticket splitting within their districts and within the party, which I find super interesting.
It might be the best of politics. If people are voting for their neighbors, people that they probably know better than we know our gubernatorial candidates, we may not have even met them before, but in local races, in legislative races, these are people that we know we might work with. We might go to their store or they might be an attorney or whatever their things are. So I think there's much more voting for the person rather than particular issues. Now, incumbents are always going to be susceptible to having some vote on something prior brought up in an election. And we saw that in a previous election with landowner rights. If you voted for this carbon, if a carbon pipeline comes, here are the guardrails. Well, people perceive that as you want carbon pipelines. And so then there were many incumbents who came out of that. So that was not a person basis thing. That was an issue. Every district is different. Every candidate is different. Every voter is different. I'm not sure we can make big conclusions at the South Dakota State Legislature today based on a particular issue.
Yeah. Mike, key takeaways from the state legislature?
Well,
some of those results, yeah.
I think one of the takeaways that I would identify is that when we had rematches, most of the time they ended up the same way as they did the last time.
Yeah.
And that involves experienced legislators who were defeated in 2024. Many were defeated again in 2026, at least in the Republican primary. And that's where most of the defeats came around in 2024. I think it's important for us to recognize that before term limits, 25 to 30% of the legislature turned over in raw numbers. And then after term limits, it's closer to 35 to 38, or 3 of every 8 don't come back for the next year. So about 10% of that is term limits. Now, I've thrown a lot of numbers out, but what it means is really we're at a point where 3 of every 8 are going to get turned out for some reason, self-choice, term limits, or were defeated in the primary or the general election. So this is part of our governmental structure, which puts so much power in the governor's hands. Just the ability to set the budget, the ability to focus the legislature on the issues that they have, the effective ability to introduce bills that they want passed. And again, if you're a legislator and the governor wants you to introduce a bill, I think I can do that. You know, and I'm sort of snickering because it's an undiscussable to say that, yeah, I'm going to introduce or sign on to the governor's bill because I don't want something coming back against me on a legislation I'm producing.
Yeah.
And this isn't new. It may be more prevalent now than it has been in the past, but the governor, since the 1972 constitutional revisions, since we, in 1963, we now have a unified budget, we have a governor with a lot more power. It's, you know, who wins the governor's race is going to have a tremendous influence over what the legislature considers. In effect, I would argue that the legislature can only veto the governor now.
Wow. And with that turnover and new people coming in, there isn't the institutional knowledge in many ways. And so we're having some debates that we're going to have again and again because a new crop of voices are in peer.
That's exactly right, Lori. And so that loss of institutional knowledge, you can put a lot of weight on it or not very much. I tend to think it's important because good legislators learn over time and they learn about issues and they can act rationally. But the numbers that Mike talked about, the 35 to 38% of turnover, remember that happens every 2 years.
Yeah.
So over the course of 4, 6, or 8 years, it's virtual turnover. I mean, there's a mathematical effect of that if you have that frequent change. So you could have a very inexperienced legislature, which then puts pressure on a couple other things that we don't think about. One, it's going to put pressure on the LRC, the Legislative Research Council, who has to draft the bills. So I can come in as a freshman legislator without any idea of what I'm doing and ask them to draft a bill that they say, well, gosh, if you knew the history behind this, you could do that. The other thing it puts pressure on, and I'm saying this in a very neutral way, is the lobbyists who have to re-educate legislators and re-educate, I'm using in a positive term, about particular industries. If you're the beef council industry representative, you've got some teaching to do to new legislators, say, hey, here's what this industry is about. Here's how you can help. Here's how you can hurt. And that happens in every industry. So the LRC and lobbyists have a lot of extra work to do right when you have more rapid turnover.
Right. Yeah.
And if you're a good lobbyist, you also know the opposition to what your bills are going to do. And if asked, you will tell them accurately what they are, because otherwise you will have lost your credibility. So the good lobbyists are going to be there. But then with the inexperienced legislator, they're not going to ask, well, what would the other side say about your bill?
Mm-hmm. Well, right. And what does this mean for the people of South Dakota? What does this mean for, I mean, the big sweeping question about what does this mean for our democracy? But do we become more engaged or less engaged because of how fast things are turning over and because the power that the governor has?
I still think our local legislators are approachable. I do think, and if we elect good candidates to office, they will take our ideas to peer and express them. I don't think necessarily because they're new that they will check their ethics at the door. I think they they will. I hope they will continue to still listen, and I think that helps. It helps us. That trend, though, about the governor being more powerful has happened for 50 years. I mean, that's not new to this election. But I think our state legislators are still very approachable. I think you can call them on weekends and get your message across.
Yeah, and when they tend not to listen, from what I've seen, is usually because they were approached in what I consider an inappropriate manner, using inappropriate language that wasn't really to say I've got an idea or I'm opposed to this and here's why. Mm-hmm. It's you, son of a banker. You voted for this. Well, I am a son of a banker, so I've heard that many times.
You've been called that before.
I have been called that, usually just by the initials. But you know, it's usually when they're approached in a manner that isn't conducive to actually getting another person to listen. And when the person is a legislator who wants to bring issues forward that their constituents want, and I believe, as you said, John, I haven't run across very many that don't want to hear what their constituents want to say. Yeah. When they're walking door to door, if they can get someone to answer the door, that's another problem. They listen to what people want.
Yeah. I remember a candidate coming to my door this season and saying, "Can I count on your vote?" And I remember thinking, like, well, I don't even know how to answer that. Like, well, tell me what you're for. Tell me who am I voting? Tell me about yourself. Tell me something. So this goes to the fact that you can't see somebody's party registration and know exactly what they're for. We're polarized, but we don't know over what issue we might be polarized. Somebody might be, the data center issue might be front and center for them. For somebody else, it's property taxes. For somebody else, it's a different issue. That makes it it's a mosaic. I mean,
we're
a deep red state. Okay, I get it. We're also like a mosaic state of crimson and scarlet and pink and, you know, all kinds of different.
And purple.
And various shades of blue. Yeah. It's a mosaic of depending on the issue.
That's a great analogy. I agree. There's many, many voters, many issues, many candidates, many opportunities. We can't categorize it in just a few.
We kind of didn't talk a lot about the impact of social media, which we could, but what I'm picking up on from this conversation with you both is that, and Mike, maybe you can tell us about the mayoral race in Vermilion, that social media might be key, and I don't want to minimize it. No. However, knocking on people's doors, especially in rural South Dakota and small town South, but even in Sioux Falls, I mean, these people were out pounding on doors. Mm-hmm. My door got knocked on several times in my district.
Well,
you're going to have to go door to door, and you're going to have to really get to know the people whose vote you want.
And in some senses, Toby Doden did that with his get-togethers. Mm. Now, you know, and he had the means by which to provide meals and snacks and stuff, you know, to get people to come out at dinner time or supper time, depending upon if you're East River or West River. and so people would converse, and then he could tell him what he was about. And, you know, and again, if you're choosing topics that tend to get people aggravated, anger wins. That's why negative campaigning works, is I can get you to not want to do something, and if I can attach that to another person, great. But going door to door, if you're the legislative candidate, that's really the only way that you can find out what, if I'm going to be a good representative of the people, if we're going to make a democratic republic work, we need them to represent what the people want. I mean, that's Lincoln's summary was by the people, for the people, and with the people. Because if it's not that, then it's an oligarchy.
Most of those, many of those local legislative candidates, I might argue that are decided before the campaigning ever begins, because again, we know them, we've like or don't like them, we know what they stand for. We go to church with them, we go to their store or whatever those kinds of things are. So, I think there are fewer surprises now.
Yeah.
Different districts, you know, they did some redistricting, and so District 8 includes candidates who won who were not part of our district 2 years ago. Right. So I didn't know those candidates. So those, whenever you have redistricting, that takes away a little bit of I know this person.
Well, and as the population of population distribution of South Dakota changes, you know, Al Klem talked about distance and dispersion in terms of the state. You know, this last week I drove from Custer to Medora, North Dakota, and my poor Bostonian wife thought, where have you taken me? You know, and it's sort of like the, you know, District 28 has 20% of the land area for 1/35 of the population. Hmm. And, you know, when you consider that, how is Ryan Maher going to get out there to Buffalo and Bison and places in Butte County and really know people? And how are they going to get to know him? Because that's a couple hundred miles.
Yeah. And when they vote, you have to drive those ballots in, which is why it takes a little time to get your election results, because some of those ballots are...
a few minutes.
It's not going to happen instantaneously.
Yeah, the Riva store, it's going to take a while to get it to Buffalo to get counted.
We've got lots to talk about in the next 8 weeks and, of course, beyond. So be sure to subscribe, share, like, and download our Dakota Political Junkies podcast. Word of mouth is always the best way to let other people know that we're a great listen. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.